This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. Stop waiting around for the perfect candidate. Instead, use Indeed Sponsored Jobs to find the right people with the right skills fast. It's a simple way to make sure your listing is the first candidate see. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs have 4 times more applicants than non-sponsored jobs. So go build your dream team today with Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Fully Loaded Chew is tobacco-free, long cut, and pouches that gives you the same pack, dip, spit, and buzz that you're used to without tobacco. Fully Loaded Chew comes in 9 flavors and is made with all food-grade ingredients and tobacco-free nicotine, the purest form of nicotine there is. To give us a try, head on over to fullyloadedchew.com for a $1 can of chew with free shipping when you enter the code OUTDOOR1. OUTDOOR and the number 1. Lastly, many outdoorsmen are trying to quit tobacco altogether, and Fully Loaded Chew may be that first step. For more information on our product line, visit fullyloadedchew.com. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics.
And I want to look them straight in the eye, and I want to tell them what a cheap, lying, no-good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless, dickless, hopeless, heartless, fat-ass, bug-eyed, stiff-legged, spotty-lipped, worm-headed sack of monkey shit he is! Hallelujah! Holy shit! Where's the Tylenol?
Merry Christmas, you filthy animals! And welcome back to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. If you don't know, my name's Dan Johnson. I'm your host. And it is the Christmas season. It's the season of giving. And man, I think I've mentioned this in another episode. I don't want to call myself an Uncle Scrooge or a Grinch per se, but man, I'm not into the whole gift giving. I'm more into the food and the family aspect of it. And so, and my wife's the opposite. So she is into the, oh man, do we have enough for the kids? I'm like, hell yes, we have enough for the kids. Look at the pile of shit in that corner that they're going to play with for the next 15 minutes. And then they're going to go back to doing something else. Right. And I said to my wife, if they bitch one time this year, if they bitch even the slightest amount about not getting what they wanted, because I'll do a little foreshadowing here. My one son, his Christmas gift. He's 6, by the way. He wanted a drone. He wanted a cell phone. He wanted an Xbox. We did get him one thing that was on his list. They're called Magna Tiles, and they're these little tiles that you can click together. They magnetize to each other, and you can build shapes and houses and cool things like that. We did get him those, but then it was all these things, expensive, high-tech type things, and I'm just Jesus, man, no way we're buying any of that shit for him, right? They haven't earned it. And so here my wife is are you sure? Shouldn't we just try to? I'm listen, if we got these kids everything that they wanted, this would be a $5,000 Christmas, and there's no way in hell I'm spending $5,000 on my kids. This sounds bad, but on my kids for Christmas. No way. I'm getting that shit. So she kind of agreed, and we realized, hey, maybe let's just stick with some clothing. And we're the family that I read this in some article sometime. I think I was waiting in a dentist office where get the really cool gifts from the parents. And then like the socks, the stocking stuffers, the clothes, all that boring shit comes from Santa. So that way you look like the champion and Santa is just like, well, okay, well, I guess I really don't care what I get from Santa this year because it's probably another pair of underwear, you know, the same shit he got me last year. So if you want to be the hero, the hero gifts have to come from you. So instead of the Xbox, the iPhone, like all that tech stuff, you know, I got them. I'm building lofts for the kids. So I have one done already. My kids are at my parents. So when they come home on the 24th, the morning of the 24th, they're going to go down to their rooms, put all their stuff away, and they're going to see these lofts there. So, you know, that's something that they've wanted. And so hopefully they get excited about that. Because if they don't, I don't know what I'm going to do. But, aside from Christmas, right, I just want to spread a message of cheer and positivity here real quick. I know this is a fun type of podcast, right? We joke around a lot on it. We have fun. We bullshit a lot on this podcast. But in all seriousness, Christmas is the time of family. It is the time of putting those good vibes that we always talk about out into the universe. And so if there's someone that you maybe have a bad relationship with, maybe now you might want to be the bigger person and reach out to them. Just wish them Merry Christmas. Just tell them, hey man, you know, water under a bridge. Maybe we can try to rekindle or rebuild this relationship. Maybe it ended on a bad note or whatever. And just send those good vibes in or send those good vibes out to the world and individuals specifically who maybe you've been the person who has done them wrong, or maybe they've done you wrong. And remember that forgiveness is a powerful thing. And what I mean by forgiveness is forgiveness. And I'm not trying to sound like a preacher here. I'm just trying to share with you guys my own kind of experiences here. But forgiveness in the fact that you don't have to be friends with them again, but forgive them and say, hey, listen, I forgive you for what you've done to me or how you've treated me. I forgive you. And then you have that monkey off your back. You have that weight off your back. And I'll be honest with you, this is kind of an insight to my past, but I used to carry that weight around and it weighed me down. And I would think about it all the time. And I was in a very negative state. And when I was able to just shed that weight, and maybe it's forgiveness, or maybe it's just forgetting about it. And you know what, just like, I no longer care. I no longer am going to carry that weight, that burden that I don't need to. And you drop that or you forgive this person. And the next thing you know, boom, you can wake up the next morning. You take that deep breath. And you're like, God damn, man, I feel good today. And you go about the rest of your life. Right? So reach out to that family member, shed some of that weight this Christmas season, be the better person, send those good vibes out. You get the good vibes back and really cherish the time that you have with your children. I know on this podcast, I bitch about my kids a lot, but every second, I mean, the fact that I get to run my own business out of my house means that I'm here to send them to school. I'm here to, when they get off the bus, I'm here to spend time with them, throw a football around or color with the kids or do what dads should do. And, you know, I feel really grateful for that. I'm just trying to spread a positive message here. And I'll just end it at that. So, but today, dude, we have a really good episode. And if you have ever gone to a trade show, whether that is the, you know, in Illinois or Iowa, or I don't even know where these guys go. I think they go to the Wisconsin show sometimes, or if you're at the ATA show this year, or if you ever meet a guy named Clinton Fawcett, you need to stop and say hi to the dude. He's good shit. Like, he's a good person. And I like hanging out with Clinton every time we get together. And but this is a good episode because we talk about something that I don't personally talk about a lot on this podcast. And that is property. So Clinton, a property fell in his lap. It was for sale. It was at a good price. It was close to his house. He bought it. And now he's having that those internal thoughts and debates about what should I do to this property to make it better? Maybe make some income off of it. Maybe, turn it into a property where the family can have fun with it and make it an awesome whitetail spot too. So that's what this episode is about. He buys a new property and we're going to talk about his long-term and short-term goals of what he's going to do from a habitat standpoint, maybe build a pond, maybe put a cabin on it. There's currently cattle on it. There's currently ag on it. So this huge conversation revolves around what he's going to do with this piece of property that he purchased. Because I'll be honest with you, I hope in my stocking or wrapped up is a farm this year. I'm not going to get that, but it would be cool. Like, I think about being a landowner all the time, right? It's like an end game. It's an end goal for me, is to be a landowner. So that's what today's podcast is about. Before we get into those, though, I just want to run through real quickly all of the partners of this podcast. Please, if you have a late Christmas or if you get some Christmas gift certificates, check out these brands. Not only are they very predominant brands in the hunting industry, they make really good products as well, and products that I don't hesitate talking about on this podcast because they work and I use them myself. So, and I know a lot of people say that, so take everything I say with a grain of salt, but I love these products. All right. So first is Hunt Stand. Go to huntstand.com. You can read up on all of the digital mapping that these guys do there. It's the number one hunting app, and it's very affordable. It is also, the functionality behind it is top tier compared to any other hunting app that there is. Lone Wolf portable tree stands, some news coming out of the Lone Wolf camp here pretty soon. four sticks and assault gets me anywhere. Wasp Archery, wasparchery.com. I'm telling you, this podcast or their broadheads completely destroy any and everything that they touch. So I have two deer heads in my office right now that I'm looking at that, when we hunt, we kill shit. And these deer were destroyed by a wasp broadhead. Also, huge contributor to my success, I feel, is in Ozonics, and that is walking in ozonicshunting.com, walking in with the unit, walking out with the unit running, and in the tree with the unit running. And I use it all the time. I even use it, like, this is gonna sound bad, but my youngest son missed the toilet taking a poop the other day. So that we had cleaned up the poop off the floor, and we had to run the Ozonics in that bathroom to get the smell and the odor out. So if it takes poop, like kid poop, out of a bathroom, it can take your scent out of the woods. So that's why I love Ozonics. There's a lot of information on their website, ozonicshunting.com. And then, of course, the title sponsor here, and a company that does amazing things. They have an amazing product line of Vortex Optics, vortexoptics.com, Exodus outdoorgear.com, amazing trail cameras. I mean, they get the job done. They work when they're supposed to work, right? That's all I care about on a trail camera. I'm not looking for the best quality pictures, even though these guys have awesome, imagery that goes along with their trail cameras. But I want my trail camera to work so I know what deer are in the area. And then lastly, if you are looking for a crossbow, one of the cornerstone crossbow companies in the hunting industry is Excalibur. They've been around for about 30 years longer than that. They've been around for a long time, and you're not successful as a company unless you're doing something right for that, for that long. So if you're looking for a really quality crossbow, excaliburcrossbow.com, check them out. All right. I've poured out over the Christmas. I really appreciate each and every one of you for taking time out of your day to listen. So kudos to you. Thank you very much. And man, Merry Christmas to all. Drink and be merry. And the next time I talk to you will be post-Christmas pre-New Year's, and we got some big things coming down the pipe here at the network that I'm going to be pretty jacked to share with you guys. So let's get into today's property buying podcast with my man Clinton Fawcett. 3, 2, 1. All right, on the phone with me today, this is like a yearly thing right around this time now, Mr. Clinton Fawcett. Clinton, how we doing, man?
Doing well, Dan. How about yourself?
Doing good. I think it's the same time every year, right?
I think it is very close. If it's not the exact same time, it's really close to it.
Right, right. So I don't know. I was, you know, we had this scheduled today, and I have my office that I pretty much built myself. My father put the flooring in. I did all the drywall work myself. And I had an electrician come in, and you're an electrician, and he ran some lines for me. And then I installed the blue boxes and the actual plug-in, right?
Right.
Oh, my God. I am horrible at trying to cut out drywall to match where the blue boxes were. Like, none of them line up. I don't even know if the outlet covers are going to fit over top of these outlets, because some of them are too far out and some of them are way behind the drywall. So I'm glad I didn't go into the trades.
You're gonna have to buy the oh shit covers, the great big ones.
Exactly. Like, I wish they made flexible ones where you just kind of form around it. You could push in, and then it would actually make it look good.
Right. You just heat them up with a torch and put them on there. They'll melt.
Yeah, right. That's how my house gets caught on fire.
Well, you should have called. I could have made a trip over.
Right. So, you know, I wanted to BS a little bit up front, but I think the BS is actually going to be, like, we're going to cover it all in the rest of the episode. So what I want to do is, you kind of had something big happen in your life this year, and you ended up buying a new property. So, and I want to talk about buying the new property, getting it set up for whitetails, and what you did and what that process looked like, because I'm really interested in something like that. So my question to you is, right out of the gate, how many acres did you buy, and how did you come across this decision to buy this property?
Well, we bought, my wife and I bought, I think it's 72 or 73 acres.
Okay.
It's about 2 miles from my house up the road, and it was not a planned thing, or it's not something, you know, we've been working, and we, you know, we're smart with our money, and she's always wanted a house in Wyoming, in the state of Wyoming.
Yeah.
And my whole thing always is, well, if we're not moving to Wyoming, why do I need a house in Wyoming? I can go stay at Dustin's whenever I want to. The last thing I need is a house that's out there that at the end of the day, Dustin and Jen would have to take care of all the time. But, you know, people who are out there.
Yeah.
But she just always over and over wants this house. So there's a chunk of ground come up for sale behind my house. My dad was going to buy it. My wife said, what do you think is going to happen with your dad buying that farm? It was like 50 acres, mostly like 40 acres of tillable. I said, well, he'll back out of buying it like he always does. She said, well, maybe we should buy it. And I was like, oh, crap. What about the house in Wyoming? She's like, well, you know, prices of everything's going up. Maybe that's just something we shouldn't do. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to do it anyways. It sounds good. So I said something to my dad. Dad's like, keep your fingers out of it. I'm not backing out of it. It's mine. I already got it signed for. So my neighbor and I was having a couple drinks one night. And I said, hey, you know, he had mentioned to me several months before that he was going to sell this piece of his farm to somebody else, the people that have hunted there my whole life. I said, well, that's cool. And we were having a beer one night, and I said, if you ever have anything else you want to sell close to the house, let me know. Emily's, you know, maybe we'll be interested in it. And anyway, to make a long story short, the people that were going to buy it kind of couldn't get it done. And I was out in the shed one night, and I turned around, and there he stood with a 12-pack of beer. And I said, I guess I bought a farm, huh? And he said, yep. Well, here we go. So ended up with a farm.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny how you brought that up. I thought you were going to say something like, well, I got into a bidding war with my dad.
Well, that, no, because my dad would have just backed out because he's a chicken. If he wasn't a chicken, we'd own like 5,000 acres around my house because he's backed out of all of it at some point in his life. Not 5,000, but we'd own 1,000.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. So, you know, wasn't planning on buying it. Didn't go looking to buy it. And then, you know, when my neighbor told me he was selling it to the guys that have hunted up there, I never thought anything about it because they've hunted there my whole life. I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, they've always hunted up there. And then just ended up that, you know, it just didn't work out. And I was next in line, so we got it.
That's awesome. So, you know, knowing you, knowing how much you love deer hunting, it had to be some kind of at least decent property for you to buy it. I mean, if it was junk ground and there wasn't any deer on it, you probably wouldn't be buying it. So what made this property so attractive?
Well, a couple things, a few things for sure. Number one, it's close to my house.
Yeah.
So which from a deer hunting standpoint is good and bad. Cause I can hunt the same, most of the same deer I have up there. I can hunt somewhere else on the farm that we currently have.
Yep.
Cause there's about 200 yards between the north end of the property that I hunt and the south end of the farm that we bought. But there is other deer up there that their home ranges don't overlap with what I already had. But so that was the first thing, is it was close to the house, because then the wife and the kids can use it a lot easier.
Right.
Second thing is it's old cattle pasture with some tillable on it, and it's really rough. Cedars, hedge, a lot of Russian olive and honeysuckle that I'm working on cutting out. But the other part that attracted me to it is it's almost in two pieces. It's one solid chunk of ground, but there's if you're coming into it from the east, there's a draw in the front, and then there's 12 acres of grass in the middle that stretches the entire length of the property. And then on the other side of that grass is 30 or 40 acres of timber with some pasture in it. So that allows it to be kind of multi-purpose. I can have the family stuff up in the front closer to the road. You know, we're going to build this little cabin in there and possibly put a lake in it. And then we can also be up there all the time, but not affect the back 40 acres where I would do most of my deer hunting.
Right.
So kind of, you know, multi-purpose where it's not always, you know, I'm a butthead when it comes to that stuff, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to be in there deer off and hunting some giant deer, but I also want to make sure the family can use it too.
Yeah.
So,
man, that's one thing that I've always kind of been debating on in my head is like, well, if I buy this property, I don't want to tell my family, no, you can't go out and use it because I've turned it into some kind of sanctuary. I want it to be,
right. You
know, multi-purpose and not just be 100% selfish with it. So, it's cool. That layout is really cool. Now you mentioned it kind of, so does it run long then north, south?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It runs long north, south. So it's weird shaped. Like let's just say on the east side, you go into it and it's real long, and then it's like got a big L in it. And then, and then once you continue west, it rectangulars off,
but okay.
It's really rough. I mean, it's been cattle pasture my whole life. It was almost all grass and cedars when I was a kid. And then it's since grew up more hedge. And I mean, it's, you know, the cattle pastures just provides you so much opportunity as far as deer management goes that you don't realize, right? Like there's just something you can do with it, and it'll be really good. It's going to take a little bit of time, but it's going to be really, really good.
Yeah. All right. So you bought this property, and knowing you, the wheels start turning in your head, right? You've already mentioned that, you know, you want to put a cabin, potentially a pond on it. Now from a deer management standpoint, like, what are you going to do? Maybe talk about this short term versus long term and how you're going to manipulate this property in order to, you know, get deer not only to hang out there, but hang out all year and attract, you know, mature bucks.
Well, the first thing, you're right. I went, you know, my mind never quit. So I was ready to go hell bent for election. And we did a couple episodes on Bow Hunter Die about the new farm. And I had all these plans of what I was going to do. Like, I'm going forward. I'm going to plant all this grass. I'm going to cut some of these trees over here. I'm going to plant food plots there. I had all kinds of plans, right? And several years ago at the Iowa Deer Show, I met Greg Glissinger through Todd Graff. And he sells medical equipment, blah, blah, blah. I work in hospitals most of the time, so kind of hit it off talking about. Well, he had saw it on Bowhunter Die, and he had messaged me and said, hey, if you get a minute, give me a shout. I want to talk to you about this farm. I'm like, okay. So I called him, and he's like, look, the worst thing you can do is rush into it and put all these plans in there. In the past, when we've had cattle pasture placed in Iowa, I've rushed into what I was doing, and I didn't realize how the deer was going to use it. And once you cut a tree down or make something, that's something you can't ever take back. He's like, I think you need to put the brakes on it a little bit. So I did. I told Frank, I'm like, look, maybe we should just slow down. We'll get some food in there, and we'll see what happens. And I am so glad that I did, because the deer use it 100% the opposite of what I thought they would. Like, they do not come from the places I thought. I mean, they come from where I thought they would, but they travel out of these.
Yeah, elaborate on that a little bit.
So, as far as the, hang on a minute, where am I taking off that, Dan? Sorry about that.
All right, no worries. Hang on, let me make a note here so I can edit this. 11 minutes.
What was the last thing you heard?
You started talking about how you were glad that you held off on making any right. big changes because, right, you know, right. okay. where you thought they were and where you, yep. What they actually were doing were two different things.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So what I thought the deer would do and what they actually did was totally two different things. Where the main bedding areas were on the farms, they were bedding where I thought they would, but the way they were traveling in and out of them was 100% the opposite. You know, we took the 12 acres of grass in the middle of the farm, and we farmed all of it this year to get the sod busted up, everything leveled and tore out to where it gave us, you know, something to work with in the future. Well, Frank and I had talked and discussed it, and we thought, well, we'll leave the food clear in the back of the farm. So let's say you can access it from the northeast, you get to the middle part of the farm, and we left the food in the 12 acres section in the middle clear to the south. Because we could still access it down at that end, and we thought having the food in the center, more center part of the farm would help out, and the deer would travel out to it that way. And plus it was easier for the farmer to leave it there the first year.
Yeah.
And they don't want it down there. It's like trying to force them to go to that end of the farm, and they want to be all on the north end. So the food actually needs to be clear up on the north, which in the future will help us out because it's a lot easier to access it there. And it allows to create more bedding to the south. But, you know, I can't overstate how glad I am that I slowed down and didn't do my normal, just balls to the wall, tunnel vision, hard as I can go. I know everything. I'm the smartest person alive deal because I would have wasted a lot of time and I would have cut trees down, made paths, did different things that's irreversible, at least, you know.
In the short term.
It would take change it.
Right. Yeah.
Change it back.
So out of curiosity here, why did the deer like to be on the north side of the farm as opposed to the south side?
I still don't know. I don't know. They just want to come out of that bedding area that way. And so like, there's 13 acres of cedars, grass, and hedge that's on this ridge in the center of the farm. And we just completely stay out of there. It's a big bedding area. You can tell when you walk in there, a lot of rubs, beds. And the way it lays out, I thought they would drop off that ridge, come down this low spot, and then up onto the back food plot field, which is where there's a big ridge back there. And they all want to travel up that low spot to the north, get out in the wide open in the field, and then they just don't want to come back there to the south. And I've learned in the past that if you're going to have a good food plot or a good food source for deer to go to, if you can put it in their road in a natural travel corridor, it can be really, really good. And until you get 2 foot of snow or it gets really, really cold, it's hard to force them to go somewhere they don't want to go because they'll just go eat something else.
Right.
They're just at the least resistance, you know.
Yeah.
But definitely something we're going to dig into a lot this winter after deer season's over, and hopefully we get some snow at some point so then I can go in there and see exactly why they're doing that.
Right.
And heading away.
Right. So are cattle still active on this farm, or were they active on the farm up until you bought it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we're still going to put cows back in it for a few months every spring.
Okay.
Just to keep some stuff ate down and naturally, you know, there's good fence on part of it and to help us with our taxes and and all that stuff. So it's still a working farm.
Gotcha. Okay. So I want to talk a little bit about the cattle aspect of it, because I've hunted some farms that have active cattle. And for some reason, like deer and for, this is my experience, deer and horses don't seem to like, there's doesn't seem to be a problem with deer and horses, but deer and cattle, like deer will go out of their way to stay away from cattle. That's just, they won't mix in the same pasture like they would a horse. So bringing these cattle in, and this is kind of a real long question, because I've noticed that when you pull cattle out of a place over the next 5 years, that can turn into some of the best habitat, maybe not natural habitat with like native browse and things like that, but it just starts to get thick and nasty and the deer just love it. Are you seeing the possibility for that on this farm?
Oh yeah, for sure. It's crazy how much the grass has naturally grew up back inside the cedars, and definitely a lot of, you know, just undergrowth, rose bushes. You know, we're going to have to be careful with the honeysuckle and the Russian olive, trying to keep it cut back. Where we'll turn the cows in is mostly where there's a bunch of grass.
Yeah.
Some of it which will be turned into native grass, and they'll come in and eat that down in the spring. And that's actually really good on your native grass, you know, for the hooves, you know, the tracks in the grass, and it just does a lot of stuff for it there.
Yeah.
But it will get nasty, crazy thick.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of strip there right now, because you got to remember, I hunt everything to the south of it, and I've got it dialed in very, very well down there. So the deer naturally, once fall progresses, they want to go that way anyways, to the south, travel a mile away to where I'm at down there, because that's where the great bedding, great food, you know, prairie grass, better habitat's at for them. So it's going to take a few to get the deer to stay up there more, but it's definitely, it's going to, you know, you're exactly right on how thick it's going to get.
Yeah. So with that said then, depending on who you talk to on a habitat standpoint, you know, a lot of guys are like, man, we got to get rid of the cedars. We got to get rid of, you know, anything that's kind of an invasive, type plant or multiple, you know, like, again, another thing that, comes in with cattle pastures is multiflower rows, right? Do you have any ideas, or plans to get rid a lot of these other invasive species to, try to bring it back to, I guess, a pure farm, or is it, you really don't care about it that much? I just want to grow big deer.
Well, I want to grow big deer, but I know, in the past, one of the mistakes I've made in the last 20 years is everywhere that was flat, I had to have food, right? So I tore out tons of habitat and created more food. And the key to having big deer is not having food. It's having better habitat.
Yeah.
Right? Because you only have so many deer. And if your farm can't produce the bedding habitat for 15 deer, it doesn't matter if you got 15 acres of food, there's not going to be any more deer there.
Right.
Right? Your demand's never going to outweigh the supply. So, one thing that I do know is not to go in there and tear it off. The cedars are not thick.
Okay.
So I'm not, I don't think I will go in and cut many of them out. I'm sure at some point I'll use them to direct some deer inside of there. The one thing I'm going to work on is cutting out some of the Russian olive, most of it, and some of the honeysuckle, because what it does is that Russian olive, it grows so big and clouds out such a giant area on the ground with with a tree that's just the size of a softball, I'll just go in there and cut it and spray it, and then that'll come back up in grass. I already did a little bit of it last spring right when we first bought it, just as kind of a test area to see what it would do, and the grass came right back. So I feel like if I can get more grass within the cedars and less Russian olive, for sure it'll be better bedding, and it's going to just continually get thicker.
Right.
As far as cauliflower rose, you know, it's not going to be terrible in there, and some of it's not bad. It's just when it gets so thick that it creates an impenetrable area.
Yeah. That's one of the farms that I hunt that's near my house is, man, the deer love it. It's thick in there. It's, you know, it's that six foot vegetation where you're just kind of breaking everything to get to it, but it's just littered with multiflower rose. Like, I have to wear Dickie or like that real thick denim pants in order to hunt in there, because if I wore like that fleece stuff, it would just get torn to shreds.
Right. Yep. Well, yeah, most of our farms that way. Like, after Frank and I ever shoot a deer out there, the first thing we do is take our good clothes off and put Carhartts on. You're not going to go down through there and keep anything. You know, your chances of getting it cut and trashed up with jiggers and, you know, stick tights and cutting it on thorns is pretty high.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things I concentrate on. And I'm going to ease into it a little bit and not try to do the whole thing at once. Just do like a couple, 3 acres at a time and see what it does as far as regeneration. And then, you know, go a little bit more from there.
Gotcha. So currently on this farm, what's the deer situation right now? I mean, is it holding good deer? Does it have a good number of deer? What's the story?
Yeah, there's several deer up there right now. I'd say there's probably 15 to 20 deer on the farm right now. Maybe more than that. That might be a little low estimate. There's more deer up there than I think. They're just using it differently than what I'd planned, and I haven't been hunting up there very much. I've been kind of letting it sit. I've got 2.5 acres of standing corn up there right now that if the weather would turn, I would go up there and hunt. There's 3 good bucks up there right now that I would shoot. I had a giant 3-year-old last year that I passed up. I think we talked about it last year after we podcasted, but I called him Dexter. He was 4 this year. Man, he was just in there every day. Like 185 or 90 inch 10 pointer, just a giant.
As a 3-year-old?
No, last year he was 170, 72 or something as a 3-year-old. I passed him up 3 or 4 times. This year he blew up and was bigger. And man, when Emily and I bought that farm, I thought, holy crap, the first year, this deer's got to live up there. Because he'd never come, I'd never see him until the first week of November down on our farm.
Right.
And I'd see him up along the highway in the summer. So I knew he had to be living in there. Well, right off the bat, first time I run cameras, I get a picture of him coming out of this bedding area, headed to the north. And I'm like, no way. Like, I just knew in my head, I'm like, this is too good to be true. The first deer I'm going to kill on the farm that we bought is going to be this 185 or 90 inch 10 pointer that I've been passing up the last 2 years. So, man, he was there every day, Dan. I mean, every day. I get a picture of him coming out 13 acre bedding area, headed north, going to little alfalfa fields up along the highway every day. Every day. I'm at football practice. Cell cam goes off, you know, phone goes off. I'd look at him after practice or whatever. There he is every night.
Damn.
I'm like, holy crap, we're going to kill him.
Yeah.
October 1st, we got football. Walks by the camera, 7:01. October 2nd, we got football. Walks by the camera again, 7:01. October 3rd, walks by the camera again, 7:01.
7:01, 3 days in a row.
3 days in a row. 7:01 p.m., 3 days in a row, exact same time.
Damn.
October 4th, the wind. See, we'd had it south. October 1st through 3rd, south wind. October 4th, Frank and I can go, and the wind is west, northwest. And we're like, well, we got it. We can't get where he's at, so we need to move around down here to where he's going to on this green food. And we moved down there. He never shows up. I had one picture of him that night, right, like 45 minutes after Frank and I had left. He was there. Never had another picture of him since.
Oh, dang. You think he got hit by a car or something?
He either got hit by a car or he's dead. We did have a little bit of EHD, and that's a little late for normal EHD around home, but we had a giant rain like the third week of September, and it'd been dry all of September. So deer can disappear, right? They can go somewhere else. But this deer's always kicked south down onto us.
Yeah.
Now, not things have been changed, but, you know, I've got a lot of ground on there, cameras on it. So he's not, definitely not down there. His last picture I had was October 4th. Haven't had a picture since. So I would assume he either went a mile north, got hit by a car on the highway, or he's laying down there dead from EHD.
Could be. Or hopefully this is what happens. He decides, hey, I'm going to move somewhere else for this year, and then he comes back.
Right, because if he shows back up now, I'm probably not going to shoot him, because I really want to have a chance in my life to hunt a 200-inch deer, and if I shoot him now, chances are nobody else is going to shoot him now, because it's after gun season.
Yeah.
And my buddy Mike that I hunt with is tagged out, so, and Frank's tagged out, so I'm the only one left with a tag, so chances are if he did show up late in the season, unless I probably would let him go.
Dang. That takes some guts, dude. Like, I'll tell you this. In my life, I will probably never, I mean, I'm not going to say never, because right now I don't own any farm. Like, I can't manage anything. I don't lease, so I can't keep people out. I don't think I would ever pass any deer like that as a 4-year-old hoping he comes back the next year at 200. I just don't think I could ever talk myself into it.
I didn't think I'd pass him last year when he was 175, but I passed him three or four times, really close.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of people that hunt there, right? Like my buddy Mike. So we own the farm clear on the south. My buddy Mike, his family owns the farm in the middle, and then we own the farm on the north, and we just hunt the whole thing as one.
Yeah.
So like we talk to each other when they're down, when Mike's down, he goes wherever he wants. I go wherever I want, you know, no big deal.
Yep.
Everything works out.
Yep.
So, and then there's people that hunt on the west too, that hunt all over in there. So, you know, it's just one of those things, but I just don't see myself shooting him right now if he shows back.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're a better man than me. So the good news is there's deer already on the property, and there are good deer on the property. I mean, any other up and coming, like 2 or 3 year olds that you have intel on that you're just like, God, please make it until, you know, 4 or 5.
There's one deer up there. He's a 10 pointer. He's got really big brow tines. Well, he's actually I guess he'd be like a 12 or 13. He's got double inside main beams on each side,
Damn.
But they're like 6 inches long, each one. And then he's a mainframe 10 with short main beams, but like 8-inch brow tines. And the deer's absolutely huge body, just ginormous. And I passed him up real early in the season up there. I had him at like 15 yards. He'd come out one night. And he just looks young in the face to me. You know, I've never seen the deer before. I've never had pictures of him on down where I've hunted previously, so I don't know the deer. He'd probably field dress like 230 or 240 in October. He was a really big deer. But it just looked like he's a young deer.
Yeah.
Like, so I didn't shoot him. So it'll be interesting. He's still alive. I just had a picture of him last night. It'll be interesting to see what he turns into next year. You know, that deer will either be the same size because he's old and going downhill, or he's going to blow up.
Yeah.
One or the other. I don't seem, you know, I'm either 100% right or 100% wrong, right? He's either three or he's seven.
Right.
One or the other.
That's no funny. Word.
So.
Hey, dude, I got a four corn buck about 2 or 3 years ago that he was coming out into this, coming into this staging area, coming out of this bedding area across this creek, coming into a staging area almost on the regular. And one night there, he was standing next to, you know, you look at a deer when he's standing by themselves and there's not really a reference that you can, you can compare him to, because there's nothing else in there other than, you know, if you flip through trail cam pics. But right. this four corn deer is now standing next to this deer that I know is a 3 year old, because he's got some really cool characteristics on his G2. And so I knew that deer from 2 years in a row. And so now this deer is standing up against a 3 year old, and he is gigantic bodied fork horn, and he has all the characteristics of a young deer: flat backs, long skinny legs, you know, small chest, small rump, but he's just really long tail to snout, and I would say like damn near a foot longer than this other buck standing real close. They're standing close to each other, and I'm just like, holy cow, this deer is the next 300 pounder on the farm, you know what I mean?
Right. We had one back in the day, and Frank and I was always going to shoot him. And then we were always hunting a big deer. I couldn't get myself to shoot. We would only see him late season in the daylight, but he was a spike. And we thought it was a giant, like morphodite, doe buck, whatever you call him, right?
Yeah.
Like, it always had spikes. It didn't look like it ever shed, but it was absolutely ginormous body.
Yeah.
And we would get pictures of it, but we would only see it late season when it got crazy, crazy, crazy cold.
Yeah.
And we never did get it shot, but I wonder sometimes, I'm like, I know that was just a giant old buck, or it was a, you know, a buck that had got hurt, or was a doe with horns, one or the other.
Yeah.
But it's huge. We just never could get ourselves to shoot it.
Yeah.
Well, Frank would break that. I couldn't shoot it. Frank would have shot it in a heartbeat. It wouldn't have mattered if there was 100-incher coming up the hill, because it was cool. Frank would have wiped it out to figure it out.
Well, you're either 100% right or 100% wrong, right?
Right, every time.
Right. So, we talked a little bit about this, you know, the short-term goal with this farm. Now let's talk about what you envision this farm to look like in, let's just say, 10 years.
10 years. I've got major plans for 10 years, and I have it all in my head scoped out already after being up there. This year, first thing we're doing is next year, the farm, the tillable acreage will all be beans on the farm.
Okay.
So for next year to start, which is short term, but we'll work into the long term plan, we're going to move all the food to the front. And then, but from that front area where it's at, you can see the neighbor's house about 400 yards away. So we'll definitely have like a screen of corn, standing corn up there, to keep from being able, just to give the deer, get the deer a little more comfortable. Now that house has been there for 30 years, so the deer are used to the house being there, right? It's not like it's anything new, but just, you know, okay, somebody drives down the driveway or does something and keeps from boogering them up.
Right.
But the plan is to move the food up there next year to that end, which makes it more accessible, and it's got a nice hill right behind the field, so you could drop out of there at night and get down and be out to access. Now, depending on what next year brings, if that is the area we should have food, then, and once we see how they work to it there, then we will leave it there. So next year it'll all be beans. Now after that, after it's been farmed for a couple years, I'll either look at putting it in CRP, the rest of the 12 acres that's there, which that might be 3 years in Illinois before you can do that. But I'm going to look into that, and then the whole rest of that area will eventually be grass.
Okay.
So there'll be 3 acres of food in there, and then the rest of it will be grass.
Okay.
Which, prairie grass, some will be natural regeneration of small cedars and weeds, for sure there.
Gotcha. So you're pulling the egg out at some point.
Yes.
Okay.
Either after this year, or next year. In Illinois, when you buy a chunk of ground, you can't put it in CRP until you farmed it for 1 year.
Okay.
That's if it's already tillable.
Okay.
Now, if it's new tillable, I think it's 2 or 3 years of data on it before they'll let you put it in CRP.
I gotcha. All right.
So, now the other thing is, I didn't buy the farm to make any money off of it. So, if the CRP thing doesn't work out, I'm going to plant it in grass anyways.
Yeah.
Because that's I bought it to have a place for the family and to deer hunt.
Gotcha.
So, more bedding with grass, natural prairie grasses, some switchgrass. I'll probably mix in some miscanthus in spots to shield it from the road, and increase the bedding habitat to where I can put my food up in the front and get it dialed in around there, but also have the grass real tall at spots in the 12 acres where I could use it to access farther back to the west at certain times during the rut.
Okay.
Okay. So that's the plan with that. The other plan is I'd like to put a lake up in the front, which would be, you know, depending on where we put a levee. I got a guy coming this week to kind of give me a money aspect on it. Cause I don't know if he might tell me 20 grand, he might say 70 grand. I'll be like, well, cancel that out of the mix. I can't afford to do that. But if it's where I can afford it, I'm going to put a lake in the front, and it could be 6 to 12 acres, depending on the two spots we have to put a dam.
Okay.
But that would eliminate that part of the farm for any deer and give me a back to my prairie grass and food plot scenario. And then I'd still have like, you know, 50 acres of it over there that would be for deer hunting.
Yeah. Well, the good part about that is, you know, a lot of times a body of water like that really ends up being a pinch point, or it's a giant wall that they have to go one way or the other around it. And man, I've heard on this podcast in particular, I've heard so many success stories of guys hunting right below a levee or, you know, a pond levee. And there's always a lot of sign down in there for some reason. I don't know what makes it attractive to a deer, but they always, I guess they like hanging out there.
Right. Well, Frank and I have talked about it a lot when we're up there hunting. I always like to hunt when there's a back to where I'm at, because I'm not good at scent control. I come straight from work most of the time. I'm not clean. I've learned with having kids and over time, I mean, we've talked about it before.
Right.
If I get to go, I go. Well, up there with that area being in the middle of the farm, there is no back. You know what I'm saying? Like the deer can come direction.
Right.
The only way you could have back is if you hunted it clear up with the front with a straight south wind, you would be okay. Other than that, they can come from both sides of you, which I do not like.
Right.
Which I could combat that with water, which would then improve the family aspect of it. You know what I'm saying?
Fishing.
And provide fishing and provide access and a levee, which would create more pinch points. It just really plays into making it better for me. In every aspect, because the family and the deer hunting,
right,
and the fishing of the fish, so be good.
That's awesome. This is one question I didn't ask you. Is there any hardwoods like oaks or any oaks back in there?
There's one spot in the far southwest corner of it that's got, there's probably 7 acres of hardwoods.
Okay.
And then up from it, between there and the cedar and where like the cattle pasture type stuff takes over, there is about a 3 acre or 4 acre spot in there that's got a bunch of sassafras trees in it. Do you guys have sassafras trees over there?
You know, we might. I don't know.
They're like they don't grow in clumps, but they grow off each other's roots. So they'll be spread out like 10 feet apart, and then it'll be a new trunk.
Okay.
And then there'll be another one, and they get real invasive, and I need to get rid of them. They provide no nothing.
No
right?
benefit.
There's no benefit to it.
Okay.
So I need to get those cut down. Either take them all, you know, I'll probably leave them standing and just kill them and then see what comes up.
Yeah.
But I need to get the honeysuckle more under control first before I do that, because that's just going to move in there next, right? You're going to get rid of one and invite in another one.
Right.
So.
Right.
But that's the bad spot over on that side. So, but there is some hardwoods, and there could possibly be some turkeys eventually if our turkey population ever comes back. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing I feel like we're struggling with in Iowa is a low turkey population. So. Anything else on this long-term, a cabin, a lake, you know, you're going to be removing ag, and really it sounds to me the plan is to just concentrate the food in one area and just make it a destination for the deer to come to.
Correct.
Okay.
More habitat.
Yep.
More habitat. enough food to feed what deer are going to live there. And then once I feel like I have too many deer that are eating too much of the food, then I'll start shooting a few does and controlling it that way. But definitely more, at least at home, it seems to me like with where I hunt, the more habitat I can provide, the more usable acres. So if I take every acre of the farm and make sure it's usable, right? So if it's 2 acres of mallow floor rows and I clean it all out and then stuff can use it, the more usable acres, the more deer that the acres produce, the better habitat, the more big deer that we have, the more opportunities we have to shoot them.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Absolutely.
That sounds awesome. So, as of right now, like the goal is also, I mean, I have a couple farms that I hunt where, man, certain times a year, the deer are there. And then certain times a year, the deer are not there. Is your farm from what you can tell right now, I mean, does it hold deer all year round, or do more come into it certain times than others?
I think it's going to be good early. Always. It's going to be an early farm because the farm south of where I hunt is not. And I saw that a lot of the deer were up there this summer and then they traveled south. So it's definitely going to be an early farm, and it sets up well to hunt early because it's got like southwest wind access, which would be really good early on. And I assume it's going to hunt really good the last 2 weeks of season, because there's getting to be a few more deer back up there now. They didn't rut in there real hard. Like a lot of the deer moved south down to the thicker areas on mine and my neighbor Drew's down there. They didn't rut in there real good, but I assume that'll change over time with the cattle being gone, because it's going to thicken it up a little bit more. And, you know, there's been cows there for 60 years, so every old doe in the place knows I need to be out of here because I'm not going to deal with these cows
right
in the fall. Right. So now not up there, I think it's going to take a few years to get that changed. But 100% for sure, it's going to be very, very good early.
Yeah.
No matter what. Like, just there's a lot of deer that summer up there. It's the last chunk of ground before you get out in the wide open, which at home, all the big deer like to go out in the wide open all the time in the summer. That's where they like to be at. And I know for sure, for a fact, it's going to be really good early every year.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, man, it sounds exciting. Like, I'm getting excited for you on this farm, because I wish that I could do what you're about to do. And that's basically have free reign to do whatever you want to do in order to, you know, maybe it's not necessarily all about deer. Maybe it's like, hey man, I might help bring the turkeys back, or, you know, I'll be creating a pheasant habitat as well. So, man, like, someday that's my goal.
Right. Well, it is exciting. And I do know, you know, you sparked it there with the pheasants. I got real big into planting bedding habitat, grass, prairie grass, which is great. Right. But the quail, I used to quail hunt a lot when I was a kid, and we don't have any quail anymore. But the reason I don't have any quail anymore, and I think it's with the baby turkeys also, is we don't have any weeds because we killed them all.
Yep.
Like, there was places that I killed sod to plant prairie grass, and I never got around to it, and then it grew up in natural weeds, and then there's quail, and I ran a bunch of turkeys out there again. So part of the farm, I'm just going to go kill the grass.
Yeah.
And just, you know, let it come up, and then I'll take care of it, because it's going to come up with some locusts and some hedge, and I'll keep that mowed out every year. But I'm just going to let it grow natural weeds, you know, natural vegetation.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome, man. My dad is doing so he just inherited 70 acres from the passing of my grandma. Was it last March, I believe it was. And so he is cash rent, and it's up in northern Iowa, so it's all tillable. And with a drainage, like a creek running right down the middle of it. Like, it's not really a creek, it's more like a drainage, like a buffer strip type thing, just to collect water. Right. So he's going to cash rent half of it. And then the other half of it is all turning into trees and CRP. And we threw a trail camera out there and already got some deer on camera, even a buck. I'd be like, maybe a low 130s buck. And we're talking about prime ag ground in Iowa. Like, the closest The closest tree is probably, I want to say, 3/4 of a mile away. That a guy could put a tree stand in, or really any tree. So he's going to be changing the habitat there. I'm excited to see what that's going to do. I'm excited to see how your farm turns out. And what I'd like to do is have you on again in the spring to talk about how some of this, or spring or summer at some point, to see how the process is going on developing this farm.
Right. We can do it.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, I tell you what, man, hopefully everything turns out your way. And I appreciate you, Clinton, for coming on and hopping on the podcast and chatting with us today.
No problem, man. I enjoy being on every time. I appreciate it.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.